Ed, look at that cloud of silt.
There's something going on in that cave.
There sure is. I can see Tuffy. And an eel is after him. Help him, please.
I've got the slurp gun. I'll shoot some fish at the eel. Good idea. That might distract him. But be careful.
Here he comes. Got him!
Tuffy's safe. Oh, thanks, Ed.
Watch yourself.
I'm watching, and so is the eel. Back off, fella. I'm leaving.
Keep an eye on him. Look out, Ed. Here he comes. He's right behind you.
I know. And he's got my swim fin.
Let him have it.
And that breaks up my best pair of fins.
You're lucky your toes weren't in it. All because of that trained dolphin.
I think he means you, Tuffy.
Oh, it's you again, huh, dolphin boy?
Температура стабилизировалась. Сердечная дыхательная деятельность теперь на контрольно-измерительном приборе.
Everything's fine. We're proceeding to the bridge.
How long will it take?
What do you mean?
Все жизненные функции нормальны. Давление упало на 30%. Температура стабилизировалась.
Welcome to voice print identification.
It's 2001.
A space odyssey.
I'm Wes.
I'm Brad.
A fabulous bird, reborn from the ashes of its earlier life.
Max, how do you say chicken?
Corazon.
Thank you. You are cleared through voice print identification.
Yes. I agree.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Oh my God, it's full of stars.
2010 is here we make contact.
Well, I know you will all want to join with me in welcoming our distinguished friend and colleague from the National Council of Astronautics, Dr. Haywood Floyd. Now, Dr. Floyd has come up specially to Clavius to be with us today. And before the briefing, I know he would like to have a few words with you. Dr. Floyd?
We haven't seen Dr. Floyd in 9 years.
Yeah.
And now he's the main character, and things have shifted, times have changed.
The pants have gotten shorter.
A lot shorter.
You'll never let us examine it. What have you found out about it?
Nothing. It's impenetrable.
It's affected him professionally. Of course, he's held responsible. Well, he's out of the NCAA. The USAA changed to the NCAA, was nationalized after the discovery of the monolith, as all science was when they went into lockdown and gave the epidemic story. And then after the fallout from discovery, then NCAA was nationalized further into what would now we would call Homeland Security.
Want to know what lunch is about? I'll tell you. We've got 2 more aircraft carriers off the coast of Honduras. The Russians are moving some of their big stuff. Now you got the Joint Chiefs screaming about Russian satellites with anti-missile lasers on them. So we got to send up our laser satellites to counteract theirs. So the president has come to the conclusion that the NCAA should be placed under the jurisdiction of the Defense Department. Enough with the crazy scientists spending all this money trying to talk to Martians. So, here we are on your actual brink. My agency is going to become a part of the military. I got a president with his finger poised on the button, and you want me to walk across the park and tell him we want to hitch a ride with those very same Russians. Have I missed anything?
That's about it.
I didn't want your job, you know. I'm not the one that forced you out. I didn't blame the whole thing on you, so if this is your plan to try to get me killed, you got the wrong guy.
You were chairman of the National Council on Astronautics. Now you are a school teacher. This was by your own choice?
Chancellor of the university. It pays better. What do you care?
You were responsible for the Discovery mission. It was a failure. Someone had to be blamed, so it was you. You like being a teacher?
I don't think I like you.
In Odyssey 2, written right before the novel and published concurrently with it. I mean, written and published concurrently with the movie. Chapter 2, The House of the Dolphins. The dolphins swam into the dining room every evening, just before sunset. Only once since Floyd had occupied the Chancellor's residence had they broken their routine. That was the day of the 05 tsunami, which fortunately had lost most of its power before it reached Hilo. Now, he's talking about a tsunami in Hawaii, fictional, in 2005. In 2004, December 26th, day after Christmas, we had the Indian Ocean earthquake tsunami, which killed 250,000 people.
Jeez.
That's a little...
That's eerie, 100%.
A little on the scary side of Arthur's predictive capabilities there. Just as a throwaway comment, too.
Right, but... You know, so scientifically, everything was there. That's definitely an area that could be affected by tsunami. It's very close to, I think, like a convergent plate boundary. That, I mean, all that lines up.
We find out in this chapter that his first wife, Marion, died in a plane crash. And he just barely missed the plane himself because he happened to be stuck in Paris overseeing a mission for the European Space Agency.
No
way. He feels guilt
way.
About that, too. On top of everything that happened when, quote, four men had died and one had disappeared out there among the moons of Jupiter. So he's got all of this on his heart. Here's my question, though. He mentions his daughter and how she's 17 now.
Yeah.
Because she was 8 when we saw her, just as Vivian probably was.
Yes.
What?
A bush baby.
A bush baby? Well, we'll have to see about that.
Haven't heard a word about the bush baby.
I know. And what's like a bush baby's typical lifespan?
That's a good question.
I imagine they have a pretty good long life.
Yeah, I would think she's still got the bush baby.
Yeah.
But the bush baby obviously lives with her. And also the bush baby's probably not safe around all that water and
porpoises. I was going to say,
porpoises.
Don't they have gremlin rules? Right. Don't feed it after midnight. Don't give it any water.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And it might
end up with a real stripe situation.
For the dolphins, too.
Yeah, those probably things are vicious cetaceans.
Turns out he has two daughters. We don't know the name of either one of them. We just know Squirt is the young one.
Yeah.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
How are you, Squirt?
Caroline is apparently a really good stepmother, but I assume by this point they're probably out in college now, which is why they're not at home. It says there's a 20-year age difference. This is interesting. So my dad's first wife died. Her name was Marion. And my parents have over 20-year age difference.
Whoa.
Let's say they've been together, judging by the age of the son. He's at least, what, six?
I was going to say like 5 or 6 years, six, maybe.
Seven? Yeah, you're right. 5 or 6, probably more.
Pretty young.
Yeah, you're right.
Young
He's pretty more.
What are you going to talk about?
Dolphins.
Fish again.
They're not fish, and yes, that's what we study.
Oh. Why?
Eat.
This has been a transition. It's not an immediate thing.
No.
It's been a few years of uprooting and transition in his life to get settled to where he is now and get new life established.
I think that's a really good point. Settled.
Yeah.
He's settled.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the wild look in his eye when Dimitri tells him that he might have a ticket.
We are going to get there first. Yet you have the knowledge to make the trip work. How much more time do I have?
You just got yourself an extension. How could you convince your people to allow Americans to go on the flight?
It won't be easy. However, I'm pretty good. A Russian craft flown by Russians, carrying a few poor Americans who need our help. That also doesn't look too bad on the front page of Pravda.
I don't know if I could convince our people. They wouldn't mind seeing you go up and fail. They wouldn't mind that at all. But carrying Americans? I don't think they would allow that if they didn't have to. We don't have to.
Three men. I figure we need three men. Russians must be laughing their asses off.
Colonel,
He's building Discovery 2 right now, so he knows more about the original than anyone. He's the only one that can start Discovery in a short time.
And I suppose you want to go. How the hell am I going to sell it?
The Russians are going to go aboard Discovery with or without us. Ask him if he wants them to have all the answers.
Not bad.
We left some good men up there. And I sent them. I have to go.
Who's the third?
Chandra. He designed Hal. He can reactivate him.
I think he is Hal.
I know.
Yeah, but can you trust him?
No. But I have to. You have to know why Hal malfunctioned.
I got an idea. You go tell the president, I'll go on the mission.
You're the NCA chairman.
That's right, I am.
It's the bargaining chip he was really leaning on, you could tell.
Totally. But at the same time, it couldn't have come at maybe a worse time for him being settled and starting a new life. Just when his son will, you know, need his dad even more in those crucial years. She's a great mom to Christopher, who is 2 years old in the book. I wonder about Himes' own children at this point, because, you know, he had two boys that were maybe about the age, and he's writing to the age he knows in that time.
Difficult to put a two-year-old in a film. You rarely see it.
Definitely. Yeah, you're so right. Oh, yeah, as a director, he's probably thinking, like, can we age this up a bit? Not to mention the idea of, like, how many hours on set this kid can work.
I think it also raises the stakes on the trip being, like, a
he knows heavy decision. Dad.
Yeah. And
he has a relationship.
It's exactly. Like, it's not a one-way, a one-sided kind of conversation. They obviously go out and... He rides his big wheel and while his dad's running, you know, they have a close relationship. So Floyd had to have been weighed down with the decision of leaving his wife and son.
How far away is Jupiter?
Far.
Why does it take 2.5 years to go and come back?
So far.
Why didn't you go faster?
Can't.
Oh. Are you going to forget about me?
No. I love you.
I won't forget about you.
We'll be able to talk to each other, see each other on television.
Oh. Daddy?
What?
Mommy said you're going to be asleep for a long time.
That's true.
Are you going to die?
What?
Are you going to die?
Why do you say that?
When Jamie's grandfather died, Mommy told him that he would be asleep for a long time.
No, no, no. This is different. They're going to wake me up. But you have to sleep on the way up. To sleep on the way down, otherwise you go cuckoo and there wouldn't be enough food aboard for the flight for everybody.
Oh, I understand.
And at the same time, how is it maybe the best possible time for this to happen in order to save this marriage? Because he's still completely obsessed, and his second wife tells him, again, you're looking for absolution here by going on this mission. You're just trying to run away again or to flush out this thing that's always going to be with you.
Exactly.
So by scratching this itch now and being able to resolve it, it's like just in the nick of time before he loses another wife, potentially, or at least goes through another rough patch again of,
you see getting alienated. The look of absolute dread after the dinner conversation when she finds out that he has chosen to spend the next several years in space.
Listen, I've been thinking about it, and I don't want you to come to my lecture. It'll make me nervous. Don't feel offended. I'm just scared enough as it is. Besides, you won't be missing much. It's just a room full of marine biologists arguing over plankton. Hello?
What? Oh. I'm sorry.
I said I don't want you to go to my lecture. I'd be nervous.
Okay.
Contain your disappointment.
That dinner really speaks volumes, you know, the just like the blankness and the kind of like deep thousand yard stare that he gets at the table and he's off in another world. He's not enjoying the delicious spaghetti that's been prepared.
How was Washington?
Fine.
You tired?
I'm going on the flight.
When?
4 months.
Where are you going, Daddy?
On a long trip.
She knows what it's going to be like. I mean,
yeah,
you're going to be a single mom, essentially.
The whole thing that's driven him to her and them to where they are now is the fatalities of that mission. And what are his odds of coming back?
Sure.
You know, you could get yourself killed.
I'll be scared enough for both of us.
And it's so much more impactful that way than, at least from a character standpoint, I think, than it is in the book, in the sense that you wouldn't have been able to film it the way it is in the book and have emotional impact, because all the emotions in the prose, because you're not, everything's not happening in real time. You're getting, you know, background.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the book, the NCA chairman, like Victor Milson, calls, and Floyd's just on the phone and Caroline is feeding the dolphins. And he hangs up and says, who was that? It's Victor. Yeah, well, what did he want? You know, the usual stuff. And then we don't hear him tell her about it. The next time we see them together, she knows because he's just gotten back from Washington, D.C. And he's reading over the mission brief at home, reclining in the living room with Christopher swimming with the dolphins. Caroline's sitting next to him working on her paper, and he's sitting there just staring off into space in the same way. But this time it's like, it's too late now.
Yeah,
whether I have regrets or not,
he's got a countdown timer in his head already flipping around. So that's interesting too. I wonder if Clark really doesn't like to settle in on the base human reactions of emotional situations, because even in 2001, like, Bowman's distress during the harrowing experience that he has, it's never really written in a way that seems emotional.
Mm-hmm.
It's very calculative, and, you know, all of the atmosphere comes from the place and setting, and I guess, like, the man versus machine. And
yeah.
But Arthur doesn't like to write about emotions that I've seen. I could be wrong.
What it sounds like you were saying from our highlights in on the books before and from the readings that you've given before, that he's telling the emotions as part of the prose, but he's not putting you into the same feelings as the character as much as he's reporting about the feelings of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're talking through it or around it as people do.
Yeah, it's a, instead of forcing you into the lens of the character, he's taking you out and framing the scene and giving you all the information for you to, I guess, in your own mental calculus, come out with the answer that shows what emotions are being.
And it sets the stage, too, to understanding the characters' motivations and the way they're talking to each other later on, and not stopping for the explanations of the backgrounds of the characters, too. Because, yeah, it's in that first, in chapter two here, he's where, like, as you were pointing out, because he says Caroline, you know, she's so great as a stepmother and as a mother to their child, and helps him with his depression, you know, and he gives it, and it sounds like it's not just, you know, that's not with my grief, with my depression, and he says with his moods as well. So, you know, he's a complicated man and a three-dimensional person. And it's not just about the loss that he's suffered and the tragedies, but that there's an inherent melancholy in his life that he has to work through too.
From the novel, Dr. Haywood Floyd dropped the memorandum and leaned back in his chair. I know this feeling. It was all settled. He's strapped in at this point. The point of no return had been passed. Even if he wished to do so, there was no way to put back the clock. He glanced across to Caroline, sitting with 2-year-old Chris on the edge of the pool. The boy was more at home in the water than on the land, and could stay submerged for periods that often terrified visitors. Is your child okay?
It's a party trick.
Call That's great. Services. Is he coming back up? Though he could not yet speak much human. Oh, I love that. He already seemed fluent in dolphin, which is fantastic.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's another C-Lab 2020. the little kids and the dolphin boy. Yeah. One of Christopher's friends had just swum in. Wait. Oh, okay. This is what you were talking about. Okay. One of Christopher's friends just swum in from the Pacific and was presenting his back to be patted. He came in for the pets. You too are a wanderer, thought Floyd, in a vast and trackless ocean. But how small your tiny Pacific seems against the immensity I am facing now. The sea of space. Oh, we were just talking about that. How like the depths of the ocean and the incredible expansiveness of space are just analogous. And Caroline became aware of his gaze and rose to her feet. She looked at him somberly, but without anger. All that had been burned out in the last few days. She had completely just, you know, when you're stressed like that, you can't stay angry for long. Anger is a very short emotion. But yeah, I can imagine just the dread of him leaving and her trying to figure out what she's going to do for the next several years. I mean, she is already a professor or in some kind of academic position where she's having to give lectures. And she's got a 2-year-old, quote-unquote, or a 5-year-old, either way. Yeah, that's a huge burden to be putting on somebody, not least of all, you know, just the fact that she's going to be losing her husband for a very long time, too. So it's a lot to kind of process.
Yeah.
So she is basically at a point now where all of her anger is gone, all that had been burned out in the last few days. As she approached, she even managed a wistful smile. "I found that poem I was looking for," she said. "It starts like this. What is a woman that you forsake her, and the hearth fire and the homemaker, to go with the old gray widow maker?"
Ooh.
That is dark.
Ooh.
I just got chills. I love the rhyming cadence on this, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't quite understand. Who is the widow maker? Not who, what.
Ooh. And this is a quote from Kipling, I think. What a beautiful...
It is.
Haunting.
How poignant.
Piece of poetry. The lump in the stomach of every partner of not only every astronaut who's gone up, that anxiety, but right before, you know, every service member gets shipped out.
Yeah.
Throughout history. This is an age-old
the
feeling.
The helplessness of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing you can do. Man.
Wow. It's
stressful.
It is. But what an amazing courage she shows when she has to be the strong one for all of them. Because what we'll see in the movie is we don't hear, "Oh, dear Haywood, let me tell you about what happened to Christopher at school the other day."
Right.
But you do hear, "Dear Caroline, listen to all this going down up here." So she's having to...
And she's also having to deal with the threat of nuclear war.
Yeah, right at home, right there with her son, trying to protect him in the threshold of the end of the world.
Yeah.
And he's not there.
I would be interested for us to look at the timeline, because he wakes up, a lot's happened since you've been asleep. So when did this all break out? Did it happen immediately after the Leonov left? Was it something, I mean, obviously it was building. They talked about the tensions when Dimitri was at the VLA, or, you know, not the, but yeah.
The not, but yes.
The not, but yes. But it's already apparent that tension is at a breaking point. So it could have been almost immediately after
the launch. Wouldn't have taken much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the stakes of the mission, including reviving Hal. That seems like, you know, maybe we should draw straws first or something.
Has anybody considered his reaction?
Are you saying that he might disobey orders as he did the last time?
That isn't what happened last time. He was given conflicting orders and he did his best to interpret them.
Then what are you saying?
I am saying that I don't know how he will react. I'm sorry, but I don't.
They've already eaten dinner. You haven't. Come on to the table, Christopher.
They're hungry.
Then you go in the pool and tell them to come to the table. I've got spaghetti here. I don't want it to go to waste. Tomorrow. Hey, you'll like it. It's got lots of stuff in it that's bad for you.
Here's my guess. They probably take turns making dinner because I feel like he probably made the spaghetti.
Because of the it's full of bad stuff comment.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like he had a rough day and he wanted spaghetti.
Yeah.
And so it was his night to cook anyway. Oh boy, you know that the son loves spaghetti.
He's just going to town.
Kids love spaghetti anyway. But, you know, she got home and she's got this lecture that she's got to give. And she's like, really? Can't you at least have a salad? So there's like lettuce with a little bit of carrots.
Yeah, I'm shoved to the side. I noticed that.
That's totally him.
It's like, just, it's a decorative afterthought, really.
Half in his mind, you know.
It's the flowers for the dinner table.
Yeah,
there.
It's right. Yeah, because he's not thinking about salad right now.
No, he's not thinking about anything. He's totally in the zone.
Yeah.
He's thinking about what the next move is going to need to be for him to get on the Leonov.
If he didn't watch it, he's going to set that dolphin chum on the table with the bread.
Slow ahead. I can go slow ahead. Come on down and chum some of this shit.
He's gonna have to get his passport upgraded, and it's gonna take months, apparently.
Yeah, it's gonna cost him $240.
Apparently, tons of people are trying to get a ticket on the Leonov.
Good news is, we brought lots of ketchup. And they love ketchup on the Leonov.
Yeah.
It was interesting that all the foods that he was given were liquid. He had to sip everything. Well, we discovered almost immediately that people could eat anything in space. And when the Americans joined the Russians, turned out the Americans loved all the Russian meat, and the Russians loved our little kind of those plastic things of ketchup and mustard.
Of course, we brought the hot fries last time, and we rendezvoused with the Leonov, and that was a bit of a mistake because it turns out that those aren't of any more interest over there than they were in our machine.
Yeah, once they get past that expiration date, I don't believe they can be considered consumable goods anymore. I think it's more of a fire hazard.
Yeah, that's true. More than anything.
For the last year, I've been working with Peter Hyams and MGM on this movie, which I'm very excited about, and I hope you will be as well.
The Odyssey File by Arthur C. Clarke and Peter Hyams. A great reference that you can find online right now, because it is out of print. Published in 1985, great resource, companion to the behind the scenes, and it's basically their emails back and forth on writing the script and then the making of the movie, and it's a fascinating insight into both of their mindsets at the time as it changed day to day throughout the process, which is what's great about creativity.
During the script writing process, Hyams and Clarke exchanged ideas via computer link up between Hyams' office in Los Angeles and Clarke's home in Sri Lanka.
I was, of course, very interested in seeing what the screenplay would be like as compared to the novel. And indeed, he had done one or two things which, if I told him at the time, I would have probably incorporated in the novel.
Arthur says, I hope there will be no problem with the House of the Dolphins.
Oh, great.
In 1970, it was the home of T.A.P. Pryor of Sea Life Park, Honolulu. And Karen, who took me swimming with Lili, the first dolphin they could recall at will from the open sea.
Wow.
Anyway, you might investigate. Also, this is in the novel as well. The house has an open doorway. Thanks again to Virginia Smith for pointing this out. We looked it up in both the novel and this making of book. And you have the portal outside this saltwater swimming pool where the dolphins are coming and going at will. So these are Christopher's buddies, is how they're referred to, who come in and get a belly rub and a fish and play with him and then go back to open sea. And then they just come and hang out whenever they want to. They're not pets at all. They're just wild dolphins who, you know, it says one of Christopher's friends swam clear across the Pacific to come and get a belly scratch. And of course, it took me till the end of the paragraph to realize that it wasn't talking about some selkie amphibious friend who lives next door.
That's incredible. And was it formally like a tourist attraction, or was it like a biological research?
The Real House of the Dolphins was basically like what he would have, like his home fantasy of your own park. Yeah, because Sea Life Park, it sounds like this guy was so dedicated, along with his wife, to the sea life that he wanted to live among them. Then he says, "Did you imagine I made these things up?" Talking of dolphins, please give my best to your neighbor, Bob Radnitz, who optioned Dolphin Island eons ago. He has some lovely artwork, which he showed Steve and me on our visit to the studio, and I'm sure it can be helpful. I do hope he can make that movie one day, though I no longer believe that dolphins are really intelligent. They are much too friendly to man.
Wow.
Somebody's having a pessimistic day.
Okay, October 14th. Oh my goodness. So October 14th, the reply. We are hot on the trail of the Dolphin House, which is great. Of course, I thought you made it up. You mean there really is a monolith Keir to lay out there? May as well be. Everything else is so predictive for him. It's crazy. He continues to say, we've had Santa Ana winds here for the past few days, and you've personally experienced Annas. I've only seen footage and heard tale of it.
Oh, weeks of it at a time in October. Mm. And it's basically like walking around with a blow dryer in your face.
It says the Santa Anas are winds coming from the desert. So instead of the normal direction, which is from the ocean, the result is a hot wind, even at night. It sounds miserable.
Yep.
More often than not, they are the perfect conditions for fires here. So not only is it uncomfortable, but it's dangerous.
Yeah, so you'll get like you'll see this hot red glowing haze that smells like a fireplace blowing hot air at you.
Jeez, that's got to be unsettling. Haim says, this time we were spared, I guess, from the fires, which is nice. Raymond Chandler described them as the times when housewives look at their husbands' throats differently. Weird. What do you think that means?
You know how heat makes people more aggressive, I guess.
He says, it is a strange witching time here, with strong hot breezes rattling the dry branches of the trees. It is a restless time. I do love it. That's fantastic. I love that.
Good. December 15th, 1983. Peter Himes says, the dolphin situation is hopeless. We cannot build a suitable house to accommodate a tank. The whole thing would cost about $500,000.
Oh my God.
My next thought is to have Caroline be involved in teaching a Highland gorilla to sign. In the first place, I think it is a wonderful profession. Secondly, I love your concept of her involved in trying to make that kind of contact with another species. What? Oh, what? I thought he was kidding. I thought he was making a joke about Dian Fossey.
He's actually...
Gorillas in the Mist was in the 90s, I guess. What? And so then Caroline, Congo. Instead of being a marine biologist, right? Exactly. Michael Crichton read this book, The Odyssey File. What if it was not that kind of gorilla? Seriously, Caroline was at one point going to be a primatologist teaching sign language to a Highland gorilla like Dian Fossey.
Wow.
In the first place, I think it is a wonderful profession. Good for you, Peter. Secondly, I love your concept of her involved in trying to make that kind of contact with another species. That is cool because that's what they're doing with the dolphins. The other, I guess the other closest to humans instead of biologically in terms of the brain, their intelligence.
Absolutely.
Thirdly, a high mountain gorilla is an animal that one never sees in a film. As a matter of fact, there has never been one in a film. Wait a minute.
Wait, for real?
Is he talking a Highland about mountain gorilla. Every time a gorilla is called for, we always see a man in a gorilla suit. No matter how elaborate that suit is, it is still a man in a gorilla suit. As a result, the proportions are wrong, the mouth is wrong, the eyes are wrong, the feet are wrong, and they can never have the strength or agility to do certain things. Well,
I don't know, though, because
if the chimp babies were falling asleep to our French mimes.
Right.
They were
our French smoking monkey mimes. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because apparently we're not talking Planet of the Apes. This was the real deal.
Dan Richter, the great... What in the world? Okay, this goes on a long time about gorillas. So we're going to skip ahead to page. Fascinating though it may be. Oh, Congo, that's awesome.
Yeah. I was just thinking about... I can't stop thinking about Amy the gorilla. How amazing would that have been? It's just her tapping on that little data pad. Ugly gorillas. Ugly. Go away. Amy's scared. I wonder who they got to do the voice of the computer for the gorilla. Hey, that's
a good question.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Probably wasn't a real gorilla. It was a human in a gorilla suit, like always.
Wow.
Amy, pretty, ugly woman.
Oh, really? The gorilla.
She gets jealous very ugly easily. Will somebody please tell me why you're unloading the plane?
Ugly woman. Yeah. Amy, pretty.
Arthur's reply on page 83 in 1983, December.
Okay, so Arthur replies, sorry, the only substitute I'll accept for my dolphins is a pet giant squid. I would have loved that. Oh my goodness. That would have been cool. He says, here's an idea. Walk down the corridor and do a deal with Bob Radnitz. He's been trying to film Dolphin Island for 15 years and has done all the homework. He could use the same set, so MGM UA would do two movies for the price of one and a quarter. Did you know I was a financial genius as a result of 5 years in Her Majesty's Exchequer and Audit Department? Oh, well, give Bob my regards anyway.
He's trying to hawk this Dolphin Island so hard.
Please, this man's got everything done. This will be an easy win for us. He continues, seriously, next to the elephant, the Bengal tiger, and possibly some denizens of Muscle Beach, which is great. The silverback is the most superb of land animals. So is that what he's referring to as the Highland gorilla, the silverback?
I guess so.
Now that makes sense because they're already so isolated. Ooh. And I've seen footage of these tour groups that will actually go out and meet them. They're always very, very quiet and having to restrict, you know, any kind of jerky movements or probably photography, anything that would be maybe interpreted as a threat. So it would be impossible to get a camera crew.
Oh, yeah.
Big let alone do a take or two, you know. Oh, we didn't quite get that one. Yeah, next thing you know, someone's being torn in half by a silverback.
Can't get insurance for that.
Cool. But yeah, he says the silverback is the most superb of land animals. The orang, on the other hand, is a sweet, wistful comic.
Aww.
And I find it incredible that even Stuart Freeborn, woo, could disguise it as a gorilla.
Even that genius.
Burn. But I'll be fascinated to see your photos.
That's awesome.
So cool, man.
So they're really thinking about this hard.
I love his description of orangutans as a sweet, wistful comic.
That's beautiful.
So, and Discworld. Again, I just, oh man. Pratchett just, he nails the more human and animal relations that we have. And one of the recurring characters that's always one of my favorites is the librarian. Because in one of the first few novels, I think it may even be in like the first novel, he gets transfigured into an orangutan.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
But he's got these dexterous fingers and toes where he's able to kind of leap through the library and keep everything organized.
That's awesome.
Definitely a sweet comic. That's great. Okay, monkey talk.
You don't like gorillas in the house, so is it possible? This is a sentence that had never been published before this book, I guarantee you, and could only be in the course of film pre-production. You don't like gorillas in the house, so is it possible that a penguin strikes your fancy? Radness is a scientist who had made a specialty of ape languages. The chimpanzee Washo is perhaps his most famous client. He was involved as an advisor on ape behavior in the excellent movie Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan.
Oh, how cool.
Wow.
In 1886, following a shipwreck off the west coast of Africa, an infant child became part of a family of apes who raised and protected him. As he grew, he learned the laws of the jungle and eventually claimed the title Lord of the Apes.
You have another family when you have never seen.
December 16th, Peter Himes replies, I don't want to use the orang / gorilla. I still can't do the dolphin, radnets notwithstanding. Roger suggested penguins.
Oh.
He has someone at SeaWorld in San Diego that I will contact, especially if I can get the ones with the yellow headdress.
Oh, is that the emperor penguin? Oh,
I guess so. The ones who look like Sterling Holloway.
Oh, my God.
That's great.
Oh, yes. Time for my stoutness exercise. Up, down, up. When I up, down, touch the ground, it puts me in the mood. Up, down, touch the ground, in the mood for food. I am stout round, and I have found, speaking poundage-wise, I improve my appetite when I exercise. Oh, stuff and fluff. That's better. Thank you. Now, where was I?
So that is the Emperor Penguin?
No.
Oh.
Oh, bother.
This is a species of the crested penguin. There's actually a couple of different ones. There's the rock hopper, which I've heard of, but the macaroni penguin, I've never heard of a macaroni penguin. It's probably a rock hopper penguin, and they have that yellow adornment. It's like a beetle horn or something like that.
Yeah.
Let's see what macaroni penguins look like. Oh, they're the most rare of the penguin species.
Huh.
New Zealand.
So December 19th, Himes actually says, I am going nuts trying to solve this Floyd household problem.
Oh, man.
I gather from your letter that penguins don't thrill you. I did some more checking about dolphins and found that even if we found a perfect house, there's almost no chance of ever getting clearance to ship a dolphin. My next thought is to break the sequence up into two parts. Start out with Caroline at work in a tank with a dolphin. Perhaps Christopher could be with her instead of Floyd with them at dinner. He could show up at her place of work to tell her if we're going to even have the slightest chance of a dolphin. I think this is the only way. Please tell me your reaction. I had a second production meeting today. The results were about as chaotic as the first one.
Wow, I'm sure. I mean, couldn't Clark just change the novel a little bit for this one particular instance?
This is the best part. Clark's reply, damn, I had just written you a marvelous outline in which the gorilla is the real cause of the Floyd's estrangement. Haywood's suspicions have been growing steadily ever since Chris was born, covered from head to toe with hair. Frankly, I have no feelings about penguins one way or the other. This is great. Then he goes into a bunch of stuff about them being pretty and easily caught.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says penguins may be distractingly comic.
Oh, it says Bowen Island also supports a colony of minute but extremely bad-tempered penguins standing about 9 inches high.
Well, those would be great to film with.
Oh, how tiny. They belie their attractive appearance by cursing madly and removing all accessible pieces of hand with their needle-sharp beaks. Oh, that's so good. Oh, wow. And he says, I feel you shouldn't waste time and effort on this unless something really clicks with you. That's kind of the... That's
what you just said.
Himes is really wanting to get his blessing, but Arthur's just like, man, just do what you want to do and what resonates with you. I think that's a great
100%
way.
Right.
So I'm glad that they really tried to nail the scene down, because it was one of the most memorable scenes. Yes. I remember the dolphins and the spaceship, and you know, I saw this when I was very, very young the first time and didn't really know exactly all the plot points and characters and everything, but I remember the dolphin scene and just being like, whoa, this is so cool.
I'll never forget.
So I think finally taking the reins off and, you know, all jokes a salad, let's just
pick something.
Just pick something that you like, because it's going to be unrealistic for them to try to have an animal transported to a set. They're going to have something local and easy to shoot. So tell me how they ended up doing that.
So January 3rd, 1984. Now, this is amazing. We're still in pre-production. This movie's coming out this winter, this fall.
I'd be stressing.
There's a chance that the dolphin may go back to the Floyd's living room. There's a giant old tank on the back lot here at MGM. Esther Williams used it for underwater shots.
Hollywood, and there's no time like the present for showing you and the fashion experts next summer's swimsuits, especially when shapely Esther Williams poses for these underwater camera shots.
Here is Fernando Lamp.
How are you, Esther?
I'm fine.
You know, this is a marvelous play.
I knew you'd like it.
Oh, love it. Just beautiful.
You know, Fernando, I'm so glad you were a swimming champion, because it's going to make our swimming scenes together so much more beautiful.
Well, I hope so.
How long has it been since we made a picture together? We swam in one about 4 years ago, wasn't it?
No, five. I know, because it's taken me that long to get the water out of my ear.
I may have figured out a way to build the Floyd living room over the tank. We are in the midst of trying to get approval from all the various and sundry organizations and agencies that control the use of mammals in film.
Yep.
We have a chance.
Wow.
Which is good that they do, and we're all glad that they regulate those things and control the safety, but those do add logistics, and so, amazingly enough, this is something of a good news flash. January 11th, the dolphin may in fact be swimming in the Esther Williams tank at MGM. I found a way to make it work, and MGM is agreeable to spend the money. It is amazing what happens at a studio when a director flails away on the chairman of the board's carpet and cries. Arthur replies, delighted to hear about the dolphin situation. Squeak, click, click. I love that in that piece of the second chapter of the book there, when he was remembering the loss of his first wife and the fact that he was almost on the plane, he was tied up with a European Space Agency payload going up called the Solaris. Beautiful nod to the other.
Another incredible sci-fi film. The original one, the remake's okay, but the original one is fantastic.
And a response on the other side of the coin to 2001.
Yeah.
Intentionally so.
Yeah.
Is there any more chum in the bucket? But this has been, we cannot wait. Oh, we got such a great year coming ahead. We've got one more piece of news, too. We've got great episodes coming up. We've got surprises. Listeners, please get in touch. Great things happen when you do. But our boarding pass came in. Check it out. Our boarding pass for Artemis.
No way.
So we're going to go up on the Viper.
Oh, that's amazing.
Of course, they'll have to pick us up, because since we're already here on the moon, they just have to stop at Clavius on their way to the South Pole. Which is fine, because I specifically requested first class, because that comes with complimentary snacks.
And they're not handicaps hot fries.
No, they're not hot fries. And if we wear our cargo pants, we can really stock up. Because it's not a long flight, but we can pretend to eat a lot while we're up there.
Oh, yeah. Now, I see, I guess you get Sky Miles for this.
Yeah, I was hoping to cash some in.
Yeah, you've got over 230,000 miles cashed, it looks.
Oh, I've got to redeem my coupon to Howard Johnson's. We can get a free appetizer.
Oh, fancy.
We got to go to the space station next week anyway, right?
Yeah.
For that,
I've got that that presentation I got to do about the safety procedures on extinguishing electrical fires.
Yeah, there's a reason why I'm not the one giving that presentation.
Yeah, we remember what happened this past
on
December.
Christmas.
So.
Sorry, everybody.
The stink will never get out of there.
No, that's true. So I guess we'll call it even then. You can abandon me on the Leonov for a few days, and I'll just sit here and sing Ochichonia and sip on some stroganoff.
Have some grappa for me. They're going to have to send an extra fast rocket for me to reconvene with the Leonov. That's going to be
that's true.
An interesting ride.
Well, maybe if they air brake.
Maybe I can. Yeah, I can catch you on the...
On the flip side. Hey!
Oh no!
It's true!
Transmitting from the Leonov, I'm Wes.
And I'm Brad.
Signing out.
Thank you.
Say goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Dr. Floyd. Goodbye.